This is Sportsnet Today with Logan Gordon and Julian McKenzie on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Lawrence holds it in near side along the boards to Cousins. Back down low. Cousins working with it. Duclair poked it away. Lawrence finds it out to the line. Montour a drive, and he scores! Top shelf from just inside the blue line. Brandon Montour gives the Panthers a 3-2 lead.
And just like that, the Tampa Bay Lightning join the New York Islanders on the brink of elimination in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And the turning of the guard in Florida seems to be in full swing. Welcome to Sportsnet Today. Happy Friday. It's Logan Gordon and Julian McKenzie along with you in the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studios. What's up, J-Mac?
Not much, Logo. Feels like I haven't seen you in a week.
It feels like it's almost been exactly a week since I saw you last.
Yeah.
How you doing?
I'm okay. You know, just enjoying the off season. Bit of a wild week in sports.
It has been, and we got lots to get to on the program today. We'll look back at two results last night in the NHL, both series that we'll talk about. 3-0 for the higher seed, and another four games on tap tonight, including three Canadian teams in action as the Canucks, Jets, and Oilers all get back to action. Also on the program today, we'll take a look at the Leafs and Bruins series with the legendary voice, Chris Cuthbert, from Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. Also get Chris's thoughts and memories on the passing of the legendary Bob Cole. If you missed it, passed away on Thursday, leaving a legacy unlike many have in the sporting world, and we'll remember Bob Cole and get some memories with Chris Cuthbert coming up a little bit later on in hour one. Plus, last night, round one of the NFL draft in the books. Quarterback heavy, offense heavy. Our pal Andy McNamara is going to join us to break it all down. Plus, it's Friday. We turn the show over to you. The Friday DMs coming your way in hour two. If you want to ask me and Julian anything that you got on your mind, 960-960. The fan feedback line is open to you on this Friday. Alongside Cam, Shan, and Greg. Julian, let's kick things off.
Yes, sir.
I wondered about this with our pal David Amber from Sportsnet earlier on this week when the series had shifted 2-0 to the favor of the Florida Panthers. Now on the verge of sweeping the Tampa Bay Lightning, I'll ask you exactly what I asked DA. Is the changing of the guard happening? Are the Panthers now the best team in the state of Florida?
It's really looking like it, and I think this is going to go, this has the potential to just go beyond what we see on the ice. I mean, we look at what the Tampa Bay Lightning look like as a team right now, a team that's front-loaded with the players that they have. Clearly, the depth is lacking. It's not matching up to what the Florida Panthers have. They haven't been that good at 5-on-5 throughout the playoffs either. Steven Stamkos is a UFA. There could be, this isn't just, you know, okay, Florida got the better of Tampa in this series. There could be some ramifications with this roster entering this offseason. And I'm not trying to project anything in the air, but I would be very intrigued about one Steven Stamkos after this series is over. Because look, I picked Tampa to win this in seven. I thought the Sunshine State battle would be raging for seven games. This could be a sweep. This could be a sweep. Florida's just been better in every way. They have the guys up front. They have the depth. And Sergei Bobrovsky has been the best goaltender in this series. We very much could be seeing a changing of the guard. And while we've appreciated that both of these two teams have been at least close to each other on the same pedestal, even the year when Tampa got the better of Florida in 2022 and it was a sweep, you look at all those games, it was very close for that entirety of that series. It's just a team had to get swept in that situation. I don't think we're seeing the same thing about this series if it ends the way that I think it's going to end. And if things go down this summer with that Tampa Bay Lightning squad that I think could go down, that gap could widen entering next season.
Here is Steven Stamkos post-game, giving credit to a good Panthers team, but also not giving up ahead of Game 4.
That's a very, very good hockey team over there. It plays the style that you need to play to win at this time of the year. So there's no question about that. But we still believe that, you know, we can go out and win next game, and that's just got to be the focus, is just on one game.
The Stamkos conversation is so interesting.
I think it's funny because for months on the CJ show, it's been a topic that gets brought up. And I remember at first thinking, well, there's no way Steven Stamkos is going to leave Tampa. He's a Tampa guy. He was drafted number one by the franchise. He's won all those Stanley Cups with them, been in the Stanley Cup final with the team. Like, he's a lifer. Like, the idea of him leaving, like, there's no way. But as the months have progressed, and now we're at this point where the Lightning are on the verge, and this Lightning team is not at the same level as it was before. And look, we're talking about Florida being good. What about some of the other teams in the Eastern Conference who could be powers for a while? I mean, the Rangers are doing their thing against the Washington Capitals right now. No, the Leafs are the Leafs sometimes, but look, they still have that star power. They still intend on competing for the foreseeable future. Teams like Buffalo and Detroit are knocking on the door to make the playoffs. That changing of the guard, that earlier question, I don't know what David Amber, obviously a great colleague, I don't know how he responded to that initially, but I see it from a much wider lens as opposed to just focusing on that one series. It could go well beyond Florida just getting the one up on Tampa.
The Stamkos conversation, he's 34 years old. He won't turn 35 until February of next season. The only way I see Steven Stamkos returning to Tampa is on a really team-friendly deal. They're just so capped out, and they need that depth that they've been missing that you mentioned, Julian. The problem is Steven Stamkos scored 40 this year and had 81 points. He played 79 games. He's above a point-a-game player. Can you go to him and say, well, we'd really like you to go like the Joe Pavelski route, right? 3.5, 5.5. Like, is he going to take a massive pay cut down from 8.5? I mean, like that to me is the conversation we're talking about, is maybe they say, look, we'll give you a full no move to stay in Tampa, but it's got to be at a much lesser price because we don't have a ton of other money coming off the books. Duclair will be gone. Dumbo will be gone. I mean, those were later acquisitions that weren't at full cost. But past that, there's just not a lot of money coming off of the books for this Tampa Bay team to suddenly get that depth back aside from Stamkos.
I agree. Like, I wonder how much you would even... There's a part of me that wonders, and this is maybe a bit ridiculous to think, like, if you're Julian Breezeball, the GM of the Lightning, again, this sounds really ridiculous to say, and maybe I'll reword it by the end of the segment. Are you that upset if you let $8.5 million come off the books, considering you know you need that money, plus whatever's going to come off from Duclair and Dumba leaving, to actually restructure your team for the future? A guy like Stamkos means so much to this franchise, and you're right. The best way to keep him, I'm with you. You'd have to sign him to an insanely team-friendly deal. But if you're in a position where you lose him for nothing and you have that salary space cleared, you still have Kucherov, you still have Braden Point, you could, in theory, put yourself in a position where you have some more money to play with in the free agency pool, get yourself another center, and maybe sign to a more affordable deal than what you were getting at 8.5 with Steven Stamkos.
The problem is it's just he's more than the money.
He absolutely is more than the money.
Right? That's the and it's not even just a... Like I said, it's not even for me. It's not even just a clearing of $8.5 million.
That's a
the
franchise
guy scored 40 goals.
The franchise talisman you're saying no to, but also
so what a else franchise, are you getting?
A franchise talisman who, as you mentioned, is going to turn 35 in February. Would you rather dole out that money to a guy who's going to turn 35, or would you rather go give that money to a 28-year-old?
I guess I'm playing. Can a 28-year-old score 40 though? Well, who's out there that's going to score 40 for this team? That's
Elias Lindholm's a free agent this summer. He scored 40.
Is he going to come cheaper than Steven Stamkos in free agency?
Good question. After this year, maybe.
Cap space is king. I get you.
I have a question, though. After the year that he's had, I know the postseason is going a little better for him. You think he's going to get 8.5 from somebody?
Lindholm? No.
Elias Lindholm couldn't get 8.5 here. for different circumstances. Fine. But
well,
like,
I think you got close to it, whether or not he accepted probably, it.
Fair. You probably wanted more than 8.5. But all that to say, like, I think there's some genuine questions that the Tampa Bay Lightning need to be asking about their roster going forward. And while I think a guy like Steven Stamkos means everything to that franchise, and there's a part of me that still would be very, very weirded out the fact of seeing him in a completely different jersey. Like, 8.5 mil off the books and a couple other million off the books as well. And you still have Andrei Vasilevsky. You still have Nikita Kucherov. You still have Braden Point for the foreseeable future. Victor Hedman is probably still going to be around. Like, we're not talking about a squad that's completely on the down. They're in last dance territory, I think, with the age of some of these players. But if they get a real good guy in free agency, if they're not going to bring Steven Stamkos back, we could be talking about them as a playoff team again. But you're right. I think Steven Stamkos would have to re-up on a team-friendly deal, because signing him to another lengthy extension, or at least an expensive extension, just doesn't make sense for this team.
It's a little John Tavares-like in my mind. He's been with that one team as the captain his whole career, and they were making the playoffs, and obviously different because Tampa won two cups. But if he goes to a different team, it would be so weird to see him in a different jersey.
It absolutely
jersey,
would be weird.
But he could just walk. He's a UFA. He can do whatever he wants.
Absolutely. And Steven Stamkos, to your point, Logan, 40 goals at his age. It's funny. We've been hyping Zach Hyman a lot for being able to score as many goals as he did as a 31-year-old. I don't know if what Steven Stamkos is doing is more impressive, but man, like, 34 years old and you're scoring 40 goals, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. It's hard to replace. That's very difficult to replace. That's impressive to do at that age. And funny enough, Sidney Crosby scored 42 at 36. But still, like, the fact that you're getting that production from that type of player at his age, like, you have to really think long and hard about that. But I could also see a scenario where he walks and he goes to some of those teams I mentioned in the Eastern Conference were trying to get in.
Detroit.
Could you imagine a team like Detroit saying, 100%. Hey, man, we tried with Patrick Kane. It sort of worked. Steven Stamkos, you sign him, what, 3-4 years? You put him on that lineup. You let him score more goals. Maybe he doesn't hit 40 again, but he could get 25, 30. I'm telling you, like, teams are going to pay for that production.
It sounds like Patrick Kane's out the door, too. That's what really intrigues me, is that they were that close. They have a bunch of young guys. You get a guy like Steven Stamkos,
man,
I'd call that a complete team.
Man, you're talking about a team that all of a sudden, that window of playoff contention, it is open. You were knocking on the door. You were an empty net goal away from making the playoffs. You get Steven Stamkos, you're making the playoffs. At least that's the goal.
Tampa Bay staring a round one exit right in the face, a sweep at the hands of the Panthers. Also, without a first round, any draft selections until the fifth round in this year's upcoming draft.
Come on. Like, this Tampa Bay team, geez, that Tanner Jeannot trade. I mean,
genius.
I don't know how many of those picks from the 04 draft are in that trade.
That guy's got to be moved this offseason.
Dog.
Right? That didn't work out.
Dog, that did not work. I still don't, like, you got cute with the Brandon Hagel trade.
And it worked.
And it worked. That's why I think that happened, because you're like, hey, man, you know, you need those bit pieces in your Tampa, to hell with the first round picks. You got too cute with the Tanner Jeannot trade. But yeah, the fact that you're entering this draft season with no pick until round 5 and then 6 and then you got 3 in round 7, that's not good enough. It's not good enough at all. At this point, it means that you're going to have to go through the free agent route. You're going to have to make some moves with your roster to make your team younger and to extend whatever contention window you have.
Another team staring elimination in the face now, the New York Islanders, after a 3-2 loss Thursday night to the Carolina Hurricanes. They are on the brink of elimination. Sebastian Aho's second of the postseason, 7-14 into the second period is the difference. And Patrick Waugh and the goaltending conversation in New York continues to be an interesting one as Ilya Sorokin is pulled. Semyon Varlamov comes in, shuts the door the rest of the way, but don't know that goaltending matters much in this series, Julian. The Carolina Hurricanes, in my mind at least, just a step ahead of this Islanders group, and even Noah Dobson, of the Islanders. It's not looking great. They're going to continue to fight as they head into game four.
We just have to stick with it. It's obviously disappointing right now, but take what we can do better, take some good things that we did, and a lot of belief in the group we bring into Saturday, and starts with one and go from there. But we have to move past it. Can't do anything about it now and get ready for Saturday's game.
Did you see, I think after he got pulled, Ilya Sorokin just like stayed in the tunnel with all of his gear on. You know, guys, they get pulled, they take their helmet off, they take their mask off, you got the ball cap on, you sit on some stool, whether in the tunnel or in the little, I forget the little area, either on the other side. It doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't, I don't know, just different rinks have different spots for backup goalies. But like, Ilya Sorokin's just there in the tunnel with the mask on.
He was distraught.
Just completely distraught. Yeah. Entering that game three, we're thinking, okay, maybe Ilya Sorokin was the guy who should have started all along. It turns out that did not work.
No.
No, it did not.
And it doesn't...
Woof. I mean,
again, it's not even my biggest worry. This Islanders team, I just...
Well, they're not good enough against this Carolina team.
They don't have a way to create against this team.
Carolina should be beating up on the New York Islanders. You have the forward depth. You have the defensive depth. Your goaltending has been on one this postseason. Frederik Andersen is looking like himself. Hell yeah, they're supposed to be beating on the New York Islanders. That's what should be happening.
I mean, maybe the Islanders push a game. Like, they haven't been far off. I'll give them that. Like, they haven't been blowouts by any means. Like, I don't think it's to the point of Washington, New York, where I've seen an even bigger gap, but I still see a significant gap. There's just no way the Islanders, in my mind, can play that the Carolina Hurricanes can't do it better.
No, man, the Carolina Hurricanes are taking it to the Islanders at 5-on-5. They're dominating play. Like, I think
the last game, maybe 110 shot attempts, and like, it wasn't that bad in game three, but still, the Islanders were at 60% on the draw, and they still...
Yeah.
Like, it's just such a slog to create offense, and like I said before the postseason, we had a texter text in that was upset because me and Shan said that the Islanders are boring, and I don't really know that they're a big-time Stanley Cup threat. To me, it's not even the Islanders of Barry Trotz's era, where I could see them going a couple rounds. They just... It's not the same group.
Shout out to you guys for saying the Islanders are boring and not having Islanders fans get mad at you.
Oh, they did.
One did. Okay. Well, I mean, considering what could be said about the Islanders and the attention that you could get from that one person, you guys got spared.
It's been electric watching the Islanders. Actually, I was completely wrong. That's a joke.
Yeah, but Logan's right. TV uses electricity.
Yes, that's
the most electric that the Islanders will ever be compared to.
Well, I mean, it feels like someone plugged it out because this team does not have electricity. They do not have that jump. But again, I think a lot of that has to do with the quality of competition they're up against. The Carolina Hurricanes did what they have to do ahead of the trade deadline, getting in pieces like Jake Guentzel. They should be beating up on a team like the New York Islanders. I'm not completely surprised. I have to admit, I did toy with the idea that maybe the Islanders and that boring defensive play, maybe that gets them an edge on the Hurricanes when I was making my playoff bracket. Boy, am I glad I did not pick the New York Islanders.
But like Logan said, they can't create anything.
Nope, they can't.
Like, really. And this is the difference between a very good contending team versus a team that scraped their way into the playoffs. And that's like this. And yes, you're right. The Hurricanes team should be beating up on them, and they are, because they, talent-wise,
they're stacked.
Miles above.
That's a really good team. Yeah. They could come out of the Eastern Conference as the Eastern Conference champions this year. They're that good.
The question mark was Freddie, really.
Yeah, absolutely right.
And tonight, four games on the schedule. We could see another series head to 3-0 as things kick off with the Rangers and Capitals. 5:00 start on Sportsnet 360. Then the series shifting in all three series with Canadian teams in the West. Canucks, Predators. We're off to Nashville. That series tied at one apiece. No Thatcher Demko. The news just continues to trend poorly.
It is raining as much as it does in Vancouver right now.
So again, it'll be Casey DeSmith, who won't be hearing Let's Go Casey in Nashville. Jets Avalanche. Jets looking for a bounce back from Connor Hellebuck as that series shifts to Colorado for an 8:00 puck drop tonight. And then 8:30 late start out in California for the Oilers. And the LA Kings, Andrei Kopitar, your OT hero in game number two. Other than Adrian Kempe, that's probably the last guy I wanted a puck to find on his stick in front of the net. That was a nasty shot from Andrei Kopitar to end it. And
but what a bat by Quinton Byfield. That puck was probably going to go for icing. And then
I couldn't tell at first if it was just a weird bounce off a skate or off the boards. And then the replay, you're right.
He meant to do
it. It's Byfield intentionally doing it, and he just puts Kopitar in the perfect spot, and he just fires it home. That dude, Crosby-esque with the aging, by the way.
Yeah, I'll
like,
take Kopitar.
Still stupid good, could play on my team any day.
Dude,
such a good player.
Anze Kopitar, like a first-round pick from like 2005, still doing it at 36. A lot of talk about 34, 35, 36-year-olds on Sportsnet today. Don't let anyone tell you you're washed at that age.
No. You're not done yet.
You're not, I'm not that I'm that age. I'm not. I mean, neither of us are anywhere near 35 yet.
No.
No.
We're good.
You guys are pretty close.
I mean, close enough, I guess,
closer
but like,
you, but
yeah, closer than you, but like, we don't have to, I mean, I probably should be having more fiber in my diet, but we don't have anyone in our ears being like, have more fiber.
I thought
in
you
your
guys
diet.
Were 35.
What made you think we were 35?
He's just being shamed.
No, I want to know.
No.
What made you think that?
Logan was right. I just.
Okay. All right. That's what I thought.
Yeah. We do have playoff hockey on your radios tonight, the AHL version. I love being able to say this after one game, but yes, the Calgary Wranglers can advance to round two of the Calder Cup postseason with a victory. Dustin Wolf with a massive shutout in game one on Wednesday. They'll look to do it again against the Tucson Roadrunners. Another 8 o'clock start tonight from Tucson. Sandra Priscina live and on location with Cass Vilgrain. They'll bring you the Wranglers and Roadrunners game two of this best of three set, an 8 o'clock puck drop tonight on Sportsnet 960. The Fan will take you there following the Blue Jays game. And man, wouldn't it be something? What a performance from Dustin Wolf in game one.
Yeah.
And look to continue it into game two. And that's how these best of threes go. 7 seed for the Wranglers, 2 seed for Tucson. But I mean, that first game's so huge in these, Julian.
Yeah. And the fact that Calgary was able to get that win. Very big for them, but to see that Dustin Wolf is the big reason why, for a lot of people who are hoping for his development, I guess an AHL game, you want to see that, because these games here in the postseason, Ryan Huska said it before, if you're not going to play in the Stanley Cup playoffs, the AHL playoffs are the best possible games for you to get that development. And for Dustin Wolf to look like that, I mean, hey, if you're on that team that says Dustin Wolf is going to start games in the NHL next year, and I mean, I think there's a good chance it will. You like seeing a performance like that.
Half those guys in the Yotes played in the NHL, or from the Roadrunners played with the Yotes this year. Like, you're still playing against Dylan Gunther.
Oh, it's absolutely a good opponent for the Calgary Wranglers to match up in. The good news is, as I've said a couple of times, Calgary's not your traditional 7 seed when it comes to the playoffs. They dealt with injuries for a lot of the season, and they've gotten a lot of reinforcements back. Like, they're scratching a ton of guys. Like, Artem Grishnikov was huge during the season. He didn't play in game one. They've got so many defensemen, so many healthy defensemen for the first time. They definitely had everybody been healthier with the club, finished higher than 7. So Tucson might have got the short end of the stick. We'll wait and see. It should be another close one tonight against Sandra Priscina on the call. You don't want to miss it. The Wranglers postseason lives right here on Sportsnet 960, and a victory would mean some home playoff dates at the Scotiabank Sound. And we'd love to see some playoff hockey here in Calgary. We've got the Wranglers playoff game for you tonight, but before that, we've got the Toronto Blue Jays and the LA Dodgers kicking things off. And to get you set for that series, we turn things over to Shan Vergie.
Time now for the Jays Report on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Here's Shan Vergie.
Well, yesterday was weird. The final of a 4-game set between the Toronto Blue Jays and the Kansas City Royals happened last night. Kind of. A rainy day in Kansas City led to some speculation that the game would be delayed, with the tarp on the field shortly before first pitch. It ended up starting on time, but the rain began to come down harder as the game went on. In the bottom of the first, Salvador Perez smoked one to left field off of Jose Barrios for just the third homer allowed by the Jays righty all season. That 2-0 lead held until the fourth, where Ernie Clement brought Justin Turner home, extending his RBI streak to 4 games. The game continued as the rain started to pour, and in the fifth inning, it became apparent that we were getting close to a rain delay. Now, by MLB rules, a game that goes five innings is considered official, so Jays manager John Schneider was clearly making an attempt to keep the game going. If you were following last night, the delay might have felt like a long time. That's because it was 3.5 hours. It was announced at 4 o'clock that the game would resume around 4:45 before eventually being called off, resulting in a 2-1 Blue Jays loss to the Kansas City Royals. After a 9-4 hot streak, the Jays have now lost 3 in a row and 4 of their last 5 for a 13-13 record on the season. But don't worry, Jays fans, help is on the way. Shohei Ohtani boarded a plane and he has landed in Toronto. Sorry, I know that wasn't very cool, but Ohtani and the Los Angeles Dodgers will take on the Toronto Blue Jays for a 3-game series starting tonight. Let's check in on the Dodgers. Mookie Betts has a .374 batting average, while Shohei has a .358, and Will Smith, not the actor or the hockey player or the pitcher, has a .352 for first, third, and fourth in the league, respectively. Gavin Stone and Chris Bassett will be your pitching matchup for tonight, and the Jays' money line is set for plus 100, according to Bet365. We'll have this game on the 960 airwaves with first pitch at 5:07 p.m. Enjoy the game tonight. I'm Shan Vergy, and that was your Jays Report.
Catch the Blue Jays all season long, right here on Calgary's home of the Blue Jays, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, keeping things going on a Friday edition of the program. Logan Gordon, Julian McKenzie, Shan, Cam, and Greg along with us, making sure the show sounds perfect as always. Still to come in hour two, we'll chat all things NFL draft after night one wrapped up from Detroit. Plus, jump into the Friday DMs and let you take over the show. But before we do that, very happy on this Friday to get the opportunity to chat with our next guest. Right now, calling the Leafs and Bruins series on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada, the great Chris Cuthbert joins us down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline this afternoon. Mr. Cuthbert, thanks for the time today, sir. How are you doing?
Good to be with you, Logan and Julian. Very good. Getting ready for tomorrow night for sure, game four.
Yes, looking forward to it. Big game for the Leafs and the Bruins, and I definitely want to ask you about that series and some of the big storylines we have there. But the world lost a hockey great yesterday in the great Bob Cole, and I'd be remiss if I started anywhere but there with you today. And I guess just some of your thoughts on the loss of Bob Cole and the legacy he leaves behind.
Well, it was sad news yesterday, but what's come from it is a celebration of a legend's life, and it's really been a terrific 24 hours of appreciating and admiring and just reminiscing about what a great career it was, and that voice will live on for sure.
All yesterday, I was thinking of some of the best calls in Bob Cole's career, and there are so many to choose from considering how long his career was. What's a call from Bob Cole that stands out the most for you?
Well, there's a million, you're right. The one I kind of always go back to is the Mario goal against the North Stars in the 91 Stanley Cup Final. It was one of Mario's great goals. It was in a Stanley Cup final, and it was Bob Cole perfection. So I think it kind of just summed up the passion Bob had for the game. Bob was always at his best when he was calling the best players, which probably isn't coincidental. But, if it wasn't great goaltending that made Bob shine, it was the very best players. And so that one always comes out, but you can pick, you can pick 100 of them. The other thing I liked about and admired about how Bob could call the Stanley Cup final when that player or a certain player got the cup, Bob always sounded like he was talking directly to, you did it, Wayne, my boy, or Lanny, you've done it, or Raymond. And, there was that connection with the player that made you feel like you were kind of sitting on a private conversation.
What was Bob like as a colleague?
Oh, he was an interesting guy. Bob was a bit of a character, he for sure. And I'll give you an example, because as a play-by-play guy, I wouldn't work with him a lot because we were always he'd be doing the early game, I'd do the late game. But we get together at the All-Star game, and we would do the skills on the on the Friday night. Bob would do the game on the Saturday or the next night. And but we'd all get together on the Thursdays. And there was one year in particular where, and whenever we got together, we'd all want to pay homage to Bob. He did command that kind of respect. So it was almost like a receiving line. And one year in particular, there had been a big takeout in the Globe and Mail about Bob. And they had interviewed a few people. One of them was Scott Russell, who said that Bob was idiosyncratic, but, you know, a tremendous guy. And so we're going through the receiving line with Bob, and, you know, it's Chris Boy, how you doing? And Greg Millen or whatever. And then he got to Scott, and he pulled his hand back, and he went, "Scott, idiosyncratic? What the was that?" And that kind of summed up Bob. That, you know, he was a character. Bob loved Frank Sinatra.
Yes.
He loved New York. He loved the Yankees. If there was a series in New York, I think he'd plant himself at Toot Shores, which was a bar near the Madison Square Garden, which had kind of legendary ties to the mob or whatever. He was an interesting cat and always fun. Bob also liked his Captain Morgan after a game, and he had a certain it was a spiced, I think, but it wasn't dark. It was, or it was dark and not spiced, whatever. Bob had one specific rum, and that was it. And it wasn't sold in the States. So he would get, during the long playoff run, which could be, you know, you could be away for over a month out of Canada. Bob would get the referees to bring in his supply for him. So,
the refs. Yeah, there's...
So he had connections everywhere. I mean, Wayne Gretzky loved him and always called him Mr. Cole and had such great reverence for him. And I'm told Sidney Crosby had Bob's voice on his cell phone, for voicemail. So that kind of tells you how Bob was revered by everybody.
You speak of that reverence, Chris, and you know this being in a similar spot to Bob's with your career, but how unique is it to see, especially with all the different styles of calling games in hockey, to see so much reverence for Bob's ability, not only from us as hockey fans, but as you mentioned, from players and, you know, just any observer of the game. To me, that feels like a very rare skill to be loved by so many in something that can be so unique as a play call.
Yeah, I really do think it is. And it's right that it's, also because I think there's a couple of reasons for it. One is, for a long time, Bob would be that only voice. I mean, now I was thinking, how many play-by-play guys are there? There's the 32 for the teams and probably, you know, four or five for each of the networks. You could get either, you could turn on a game now and hear any one of 50 guys calling the game. Well, for quite a while on a Saturday night, you'd tune in and it was almost always just Bob Cole. So I think there was that comfort level of hearing Bob's voice. We often joke about play-by-play guys are like bedroom slippers. The older and more used to them you get, the more comfortable it is. But you never got more comfortable than with Bob, I don't think. But it's also the obvious, the skill level, and you the way you phrase it is really interesting, because I started in the mid '80s and I was brought in really by producers. I was groomed to be unlike Bob, okay. Which sounds funny, but yeah. they wanted to go from play-by-play, the Bob Cole style, to conversational with play-by-play and color guy. In fact, my very first game on Hockey Night, I thought went pretty well, and Ralph Mellenby called me on the following Monday or Tuesday, and he kind of, you know, he wasn't very complimentary. He said, that's not what we were looking for. You gave me the traditional. We want something different. And so NBC was the same way in the early 2000s. And I think we really, a lot of us started to really try to develop that conversation. And the analyst would shine. Now, you know, you guys know the story that the analyst with Bob was not allowed to speak while the game was on.
And
if they did, the famous Heisman.
Yes, Bob, the arm out. Yes.
Bob would get the straight arm out. So it was completely different than what they wanted the rest of us to be. And the only reason I'm telling you the story is because as the longer I've been in this, the more I've realized that the way Bob was doing it was probably the way fans wanted it anyway. So I know we still have conversations during the game, and I think it's valuable that if we've just seen something and the puck goes down the ice, that you hear from the guy who played on why that last play happened or should have been better or why it worked so well. And but for the most part, I think the fan wants the Bob Cole style of kind of old fashioned call. And so he stood the test of time, which is a long winded way of me saying, I think that's one of the beauties of why Bob was so successful.
To Chris's point, one of my favorite Bob Cole memories, it's the very last game he called. It was a Canadiens Leafs game with Ryan Poehling. I don't know if you guys in this market are familiar with Ryan Poehling. He's got a hat trick in his NHL debut. And for the entirety of overtime and the shootout, it was just Bob Cole. I think he was working with Gary Galley on that broadcast. Bob Cole called the entirety.
I think Greg Millen laid out, and we'll give Millsy full marks for that. I think he
might have been Millsy,
realized
right.
this is Bob Cole's last game, and it was only fitting that yes, he went and Ryan Poehling gave him one last thing to talk about.
Still couldn't believe that. Anyway,
last on Bob here, and you mentioned it a bit there as you came into the industry, Chris. But was Bob and his style something that you tried to emanate as you were making your way up to the National Hockey League? Did you try to be your own voice, or was Bob one of many that you tried to bring to your own style?
Probably one of many. And Bob was a little more intimidating because I don't know if anybody could repeat that voice. I mean, it is the greatest voice of all. And, it's funny to say because he was in it so long, but maybe I'm aging myself. But as a kid, when I first started listening to games, there was a little bit of Bob as he started on CBC radio, but there was a lot of Dan Kelly and Danny Gallivan. And I put those three along with Foster Hewitt on my hockey broadcaster, Mount Rushmore. And I certainly hold the other two in just as high a regard. I went to bed at night with a transistor radio under my pillow, listening to KMOX or CBC Radio or Foster Hewitt on CKFH in Toronto. And it's funny that as long as Bob's been in it, I was just starting to pave my way as he was, at a lower level as Bob was getting underway with his NHL career. So yeah, influence for sure. Because the longer I listened to him, the more I thought, this is a special cadence, and this is a guy that is setting the bar for sure.
The great Chris Cuthbert along with us here on Sportsnet today. It's Logan Gordon and Julian McKenzie along with you. And Chris right now in the midst of a playoff series in Toronto that sees the Leafs down 2-1, Julian.
Chris, we got to get to some Leafs questions here, particularly with William Nylander, who hasn't made an appearance as of yet in this series. And there's been a lot about, well, why is he not playing? What's going on? Is it actually migraines that's keeping him out? What do you think of all the attention? I mean, of course, it's Toronto. It's going to be that way, especially with the circumstances around this team. But what do you make of all the attention around William Nylander and his presence or lack thereof in this series?
Yeah, it's been a mystery for sure. It sounds like he is going to be in the lineup, and I think he can be a difference maker, which is probably not breaking news. But this series is so close that a guy that was flirting with 100 points and going to be on a third line that could get some favorable matchups, I think he can be the difference. We've been debating this because I think it's easy to say, man, this is a distraction, and this is clearly a problem for the Leafs. I think every player in that room knows exactly what's going on, and the only distraction might be is they have to listen to questions that they're not answering anyway about Nylander. So it's different than anything we've seen with the Leafs because they've been usually relatively open. I mean, upper body, lower body isn't really full disclosure, but they're not even doing that. The biggest factor is Nylander hasn't played in three games, and there's probably been two of them where he might have made a difference.
I know it comes in a loss in game three, Chris, but how important do you think it was to have Mitch Marner back looking like an impact player for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
I don't think he's quite there yet, to be honest with you. He made a terrific play on the goal by Matthew Nyes, but I think there's more there. And yet, I thought Craig Simpson brought up a point that was, you know, I know my light bulb went on when he said it, because I haven't read it, and this team gets covered from pillar to post, and nobody's really said, you know what, maybe he just isn't right, because a high ankle sprain can take a lot longer. It could be till midsummer before he's exactly where he should be. Now, the Bruins are swarming him. They're closing quickly on him, and maybe that's why he's been contained, but he's a guy that over the years you've seen able to, you know, beat that kind of pressure, and then the rest of the ice is opened up for him to make the most of. So I think there's more from Mitch Marner there, and there's been a lot of talk. Does he disappear in the playoffs? Well, he had 10 points in the first four games against Tampa last year, but his point totals at the end of series have been minimal over the years. So, it depends on what side of the argument you want to get on about how good he's been in the past. But I still think they need him to be better if they're going to beat the Bruins. But I think it's possible unless we don't know enough about what that ankle injury is all about.
We have to get some perspective from the Bruins as well. I want to put you in Jim Montgomery's shoes right now. We've seen that they've gone back and forth in playoff history, at least going back and forth with Jeremy Swayman and Linus Ullmark in net. Jeremy Swayman has been looking real good against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Would you start him in game four if you're the Boston Bruins, or would you go back to Linus Ullmark in game four?
I think he's got to go to Swayman now. Now, I thought he'd go to Swayman in game two, and when he didn't, I thought, okay, I understand. You went out there and said mea culpa after last year that you went with Ullmark too long, and then in game seven you kind of threw Swayman into a bad spot. So I was, as soon as Ullmark came out for game two, it was clear that the plan was they were going to alternate for the first two. Now the question is the plan to just alternate continually? I know Harry Sinden, who used to run everything with the Bruins, and I think some people probably were suspicious that Harry still, even at 90, was still running the Bruins. But he said after game one that, there's no way Swayman shouldn't play game two, that it should be win and stay in, which is what I assumed it was going to be. It wasn't, but for the first two games. But now I've got to believe it's win and stay in. And if it isn't, and Ullmark loses again, Jim Montgomery's putting himself right out there on the line again.
Staying on the Bruins side of things, Brad Marchand, I'm uniquely intrigued by the evolution of this player, Chris, and how he, you know, was the pest of so many teams for years to come, and now we see him with this captain C on his chest, taking over the great years of Zdeno Chara and even Patrice Bergeron there in Boston. And I think it speaks so much to the culture they've established there. But Brad Marchand, to me, is just one of those players that you would absolutely kill to have on your team. And I'm curious, from your perspective, watching him all these years, how have you seen that evolution in his game as well?
Well, I am an admirer. I remember like 10 years ago talking to Marchand about the fact that he was never content on going to, on being a third line kind of grinding pest kind of player. He believed he could be a scorer in the NHL, and he became that. And it's impressive how much offensive ability he has. I'm the guys kid me about how I love lists, and you follow where he is. If he gets a point tomorrow, he ties Guy Lafleur in Stanley Cup playoff points, and he tied Cam Neely for the most goals in Boston Bruin playoff history. I mean, this guy is an offensive talent. And you mentioned Chara and Bergeron. So he's learned from two of the best leaders in hockey. And Wayne Gretzky was telling a story the other day about the fact that he went and skated with the rookies for 5 days just to make sure that all the young guys understood what it meant to be a Bruin. So, you know, he's a leader. He's a talented player. He's a pain in the butt. And I think the biggest question is, how does a guy like Brad Marchand get 3 games into this based on what we've watched, and he still doesn't have a penalty minute? So I think the Leafs are asking that question.
Yeah, I believe Sheldon Keefe was wondering that as well after game three. He was pretty curious how that worked as well. Chris, I can't thank you enough for the time. Thank you for sharing some memories of your colleague, the great Bob Cole. We really appreciate that. And just to thank you for the time. I know myself and Julian hold you in such high regard in your spot in hockey as well, right up there with the great Bob Cole. So we really do thank you for joining us today. I hope we can do it again sometime soon.
Yeah, Logan, Julian, my pleasure, and especially if we can celebrate the life of the legend, for sure. Thanks.
Anytime. Have a great call Saturday, sir.
Thanks.
Bye now. Chris Cuthbert joining us down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline this afternoon, and I'll put that up there with one of the cooler interviews that you get to do during this job because, yes, while we celebrate the great Bob Cole, and it absolutely deserves all the time and respect, I can't help but feel very similar about the man we just talked to,
yep.
Julian, Chris Cuthbert. As people on the text line have mentioned, I mean,
he's right up there for me, man.
As good as they come there as well.
Chris Cuthbert is right up there for me. In terms of just not just hockey broadcasters, but just broadcasters, period. I've just enjoyed Chris's work for as long as I've been watching hockey, to be honest with you. And I know some people have mentioned his work in the CFL as well. He's got great calls over there too.
As that texter mentioned, I missed him too.
Yeah.
Doing CFL games.
Absolutely.
Was so good.
I think Chris Cuthbert's one of the best broadcasters we've ever had in hockey, whether on the Canadian side, you've also heard him occasionally on the NBC side, like, to have him at covering Stanley Cup playoffs. Like, it's not that long ago. He covered like his first ever Stanley Cup final. When he joined Sportsnet, he had never done play-by-play for a Stanley Cup final, and that was all he was missing in his repertoire. This is a guy who had covered Olympics. He has the golden goal call that will stay with him forever. I'm sure he gets asked about that all the time. But the fact that we now have the privilege of being able to listen to him on and watch him on broadcasts with Sportsnet, that's really cool. And he's one of my favorites for me. Like, I enjoy listening to him.
Yeah, and I only gained more respect for the guy I listened to talk about Bob Cole and, you know, the reverence that he has for that guy. And it was kind of a two-for-one. We get to talk about Bob Cole and talk about his legacy, but we also got to take to a guy that's in the midst of his own legacy right now in Chris Cuthbert. So it was a double whammy for us. Really awesome to have Chris on again. I can't wait to do that once more. He's so humble. He's such a great guy.
He's a really humble guy, man. I met him in person like once, and he's just like the most humble, down to earth, not pretentious dude, man. He's great.
Loved every minute of that. If you missed any of it, it'll be up on the podcast coming up shortly. One that we'll want to revisit. You can hear Chris on the call with Craig Simpson Saturday night in Toronto, Game 4. Leafs and Bruins get an extra night off in between games to set up a little Saturday night action. Bruins lead that series 2-1. Take a break, come back on the other side, kicking off hour 2 with some football discussion. The NFL draft round 1 in the books. Round 2 and 3 go on Friday night. Our pal Andy McNamara kicks off hour 2, chatting all things NFL next here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.